Warning. The following talk contains strong language and disturbing images. You may react with feelings of despair or being overwhelmed. Either is understandable and perfectly normal. But the topic is important. As a result, listening may be inappropriate for those under 1 year of age or over 101. Climate change. Really? Why should I give a hoot? Let me begin with a story. As some of you may know, I, together with Marilyn Medine and Teresa Morton, belong to a team that talks to people about this topic. At our last presentation, we had just concluded a section on what we can do as individuals when a man put up his hand to say that we had just told him to stop all of his favorite activities in life. "I worked hard all my life," he started, "and I enjoy my big car. Flying somewhere warm in February is great. And fresh tropical fruit tastes especially good in the middle of winter. It's my money. I've got the right to spend it any way I want. Really, why should I give a hoot about some guy on the other side of the planet?" Well, that certainly got me thinking. To that point, I had anticipated that we needed only to convince people that climate change was real, that humans were causing it by creating more carbon dioxide than nature could handle without temperature increases, and the problem would resolve itself with our voluntary reducing our emissions. A leads to B, which leads to C. After all, are we not rational creatures? How would Mr. Spock have responded? Well, this man's question had thrown my thinking right on its ear. There were entire dimensions to the climate change question that I had never entertained. Ethics, empathy, reasons for our resistance to resolving it. As I see it, leaders of the world's religions advocate similar behaviors for environmentally appropriate living. In 2009, for example, in an Ebor lecture titled "Renewing the Face of the Earth, Human Responsibility and the Environment," the Archbishop of Canterbury stated, "Getting our relationship with the rest of the created order into proper perspective is both a responsibility and a necessity. Failure could have disastrous consequences. There is no way of manipulating our environment that is without cost or consequences. Ecological questions are increasingly defined as questions of justice, both to those who now have no part in decision-making at the global level, yet bear the heaviest burden as a consequence of the responsibility of wealthier nations, and to those who will succeed us on the planet, and to our children and grandchildren." In 2002, in Love in a Better Way, Reflections on Truth, Love, and Happiness, the Dalai Lama wrote the following: just as we should cultivate more gentle and peaceful relations with our fellow human beings, we should also extend that same kind of attitude towards the natural environment. Morally speaking, we should be concerned for our whole environment. This, however, is not just a question of morality or ethics, but also a question of our own survival. For this generation and for future generations, the environment is very important. If we exploit the environment in extreme ways, we may receive some benefit today, but in the long run, we will suffer, as will our future generations. When the environment changes, the climatic conditions also change. When the climate changes dramatically, the economy and many other things change. In 2015, Pope Francis published Laudato Si, on care of our common home. Laudato Si is medieval Italian for praise be to you. This was his second encyclical. In it, Francis begins by acknowledging that climate change is largely caused by humans. He then condemns the lifestyle of the developed world, stating, although the post-industrial period may well be remembered as one of the most irresponsible in history, nonetheless, there is reason to hope that humanity, at the dawn of the 21st century, will be remembered for having generously shouldered its grave responsibility. He goes on to say, never have we so hurt and mistreated our common home as we have in the last 200 years. Francis sees clearly that we all must be involved in the problem's remedy, addressing his encyclical to all men and women on earth and stating, I am well aware that in the areas of politics and philosophy, that there are those who firmly reject the idea of a creator or consider it irrelevant. Others view religion simply as a subculture to be tolerated. Nonetheless, science and religion, with their distinctive approaches to understanding reality, can enter into an intense dialogue fruitful for both. Francis sees our crisis as having dimensions beyond the environment, observing that nature cannot be regarded as something separate from ourselves or as a mere setting in which we live. Instead, the analysis of environmental problems cannot be separated from the analysis of human, family, work-related, and urban contexts, nor from how individuals relate with themselves. We are faced not with two separate crises, one environmental and the other social, but rather with one complex crisis, which is both environmental and social. Strategies for a solution demand an integrated approach to combating poverty. Restoring dignity to the excluded and, at the same time, protecting nature. He asks, what kind of world do we want to leave to those who come after us, to children who are now growing up? It is no longer enough, then, to state that we should be concerned for future generations. We need to see that what is at stake is our own dignity. Leaving an inhabitable planet to future generations is first and foremost up to all of us. The issue is one that dramatically affects us, for it has to do with the ultimate meaning of our earthly sojourn. Although Francis doesn't mention capitalism by name, he does offer Nazism, communism, and totalitarianism, together with the United States, interestingly, as environments where lives are destroyed in the pursuit of power and control. He begins to develop his thesis that our environmental problems stem directly and inevitably from our capitalistic economic system when he observes that having work should be treated as a human right because it is part of the meaning of life on this earth, a path to growth, human development, and personal fulfillment, while to stop investing in people in order to achieve greater short-term financial gain is bad business for society. That he should see tension between capitalism with its values of competition, individualism, and self-interest, and religious teaching with its values of cooperation, sharing, peaceful coexistence, and fairness is hardly surprising. Francis goes on to emphasize his view that the citizens of the poor nations will be the most severe victims of climate change, counseling us to hear both the cry of the earth and the cry of the poor. He asks us to reflect on what the commandment, thou shalt not kill, means when 20% of the world's population, us, consumes resources at a rate the poor nations and future generations of what they need to survive. He urges us to move beyond capitalism to evolve an ascetic culture of solidarity and harmony, where we respect the earth and people, where the respect of people and earth, not profit, are of prime importance. Revolutionary changes are required at all levels, he maintains. Political, economic, social, communal, familial, and personal. The overall agreement between religious leaders is hardly surprising, given the similarity in the environmental teachings of the world's sacred texts. The Islamic Hadith, which records the words of Muhammad, for example, reads, "The earth is green and beautiful, and Allah has appointed you his stewards over it. The whole world has been created a place of worship, pure and clean. Whoever plants a tree and diligently looks after it until it matures and bears fruit will be rewarded. If a Muslim plants a tree or sows a field, and humans and birds and beasts eat from it, all of it is love on his part." Followers of Taoism lead simple, quiet, modest lives. They are urged to shed both selfishness and desire, the satisfaction with what one has is seen as the path to serenity. The Zhangir commentary on Lao Tzu, written about 200 years BC, says, "Do not labor your mind to get more money to nourish your body. Do not usurp power to glorify yourself. Do not indulge in the five flavors to satisfy your cravings. Though your clothes be tattered and your shoes ragged, you should still not strive for fame and gain." In 1986, His Royal Highness Prince Philip invited leaders of the world's religions to discuss together how their faiths could help save our natural world. In their conclusions, titled the Assisi Declaration on Nature, the Hindu statement was that all objects in the universe, humans, other animals, and inanimate objects, bear the same spiritual power. Humans are seen as having evolved from a lower, lesser life, and so are intimately linked with them. Nature is seen to be sacred and cannot be harmed without our also being harmed. And further, that the divine cannot be separated from creation, but expresses itself through natural phenomena. Theologians, both current and of antiquity, speak with one voice. Living a life of compassion and generosity towards the disadvantaged, of cooperation and of love for one another. If we choose not to follow these prescriptions and continue to live as our nation has to this point, how will we affect the poor nations of the world. Climate change offers many faces. Changing weather patterns can cause famine through affecting both crop growth and animal habitat. Fisheries can dwindle. It can cause drought through changed rainfall patterns or glacial melting. Intensification of summer fires can jeopardize personal safety, as can more frequent floods and storms. New diseases can appear in an area. If one lives in a low-lying area, like the river delta that is Bangladesh, or a small oceanic island, one's entire country can be overridden by the sea. I submit that there are three solid reasons to care deeply about climate change. First, to not care is to harm the poor of our world. To care is just, it is civilized, and it is Unitarian. Second, to not care is to harm our children and grandchildren by bequeathing to them a world that is damaged and less habitable than the one passed on to us. And third, to not care is to harm ourselves. For climate change is happening today. The 4-year drought in California is affecting the price of the groceries we all buy. Climate change is implicated in the disappearance of our East Coast cod fishery. Similarly, pine trees throughout Canada are being attacked and killed by beetle infestation. Reduced snowpack and the melting of glaciers in the Rocky Mountains are jeopardizing irrigation potential for farming next year. Sea levels are rising and the oceans are getting more acidic. I could go on. I am a citizen of Canada, but before that, I am a citizen of the world. I accept my responsibilities to not harm my fellow citizens. How about you?